has been a pretty good bill to stop problems since that time, but there have been a few minor things that have come up. Most of these are fairly minor, but would kind of like to change some of them if we can. I'll go over them as briefly as I can. Page 1, new language of lines 15 and 16 ensures that when a deferred annuity contract is used to fund an insurance-funded pre-need contract, the annuitant is the beneficiary of the contract. Basically, there have been maybe at least an instance or two where a seller has named like a child, a member of their family, as the annuitant, and keep stacking up insurance policies in that child's name. It's not that they're not paying for the funerals, but the problem is if something were ever happened to that child, you would have all that insurance gone, and something that hadn't been paid for might not get paid for. We don't want that. So this would stop that. This simply means that the contract is in the person who bought its name, and that's it. Two has no changes. Page 3, the new language, and line 4 changes 60 days to 30 days. And what we're trying to do here, there are...
The noise level is getting a little bit high. Let us move our conversations to the side gallery if necessary. Senator from Christian, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. What we're trying to do here is change when the money either goes into the bank, goes into the insurance company, goes into the trust fund. We're trying to put it all at the same time, 30 days. Right now, some of them are 10 days, some of them are 60 days. It gets a little confusing, so we're just trying to say everything is 30 days. On page 4, the language on line 69 of this section is if in the original act, the reference was to this subsection, where in fact the issue of expenses is found in the preceding subsection, which is subsection 9. This clarifies which expenses are allowed. On page 6, the new language, line 31 of the pre-need contract, added for clarity. The original sentence, the purchaser or beneficiary shall be the owner of the insurance policy purchased to fund a pre-need contract, is somewhat unclear. On page 7, the new language, line 18, changes the time consideration paid into a deposit, again, from 10 days to 30 days. The reason we do that is even when you have a trust fund at a bank, today, with all the new laws we've got on banks to get everything together, it can sometimes be difficult to get it done in 10 days. Also,
Senators, the noise level in this chamber is getting somewhat loud. I think perhaps the senator from Cole or the senator from Buchanan are the principal source of the problem. Let's keep the noise to a minimum and, if necessary, move your conversations to the side gallery. I apologize, Senator from Christian. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm trying to out-talk the roar, but it's about as loud as I get. Mm-hmm. So, again, what we're trying to say is if everything is 30 days, it's all, everybody knows what it is, and that's what we're trying to do there. Also on that same page, provider is changed to providers. The possessive is more accurate in grammar. On page 9, new subsection 5, this is the most confusing portion of the bill. It makes it clear that when the consideration for a pre-need contract includes as consideration the seller or provider being made the beneficiary of a life insurance, this is when you have maybe one of your Gerber baby policies or an old whole life policy, and you turn that in to the provider to pay for your funeral. If that policy, because in the old laws, before we changed this chapter, the insurance company, the provider could change that to them being the beneficiary. That caused a heck of a lot of problems. Particularly one company in the state would take those and cash them out. They would borrow against them. It caused a huge, massive problem in the funeral industry. We do not allow that to happen anymore. So because of that, the funeral home director, not owning the policy, has no right to find out the condition of the policy. In other words, the person could make the funeral home the beneficiary today, tomorrow could change it to somebody else, or could borrow money against it, or could just not pay the payments and let it lapse. All we're saying is if any of those things happens, if it lapses, if they change the ownership, then the funeral home, there is no contract. That policy was given as part of the contract. If it's no longer valid, there is no contract. But we also say in this section that if there was also cash given, let's say the funeral cost $7,000, you gave a $5,000 Gerber policy and $2,000 cash, the cash has to be returned. The cash would be returned to the person who bought the policy, but the insurance policy cancels the thing. There is no contract once the insurance policy is there. You just return the cash that they had given you. Page 10, new language, line 37, requires that in the annual report required, the seller include the market value of the trust fund. Current law says the current face value of the trust fund. This was a mistake in the original legislation that we did, as trusts do not have a face value, they have a market value. On page 11, the new language, line 75 and 76, a new phrase is added to the requirement that the status and total face value of each policy, if requested by the board, referred to as the Board of Funeral Directors and Embalmers, they may request the status and total face value of each policy, but if they don't, then they do not have to be calculated and reported. This can eliminate needless confusion in the current reports where items that do not exist or cannot be determined are being asked for. That is everything that's in the bill that I know of. I'll be glad to answer any questions. Otherwise, I renew my motion.
The senator from Christian renews his motion that the that Senate Bill number 951 be declared perfected and ordered printed. Does any senator desire to be heard? Senator from the 15th, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, I would ask for unanimous consent to introduce some special guests.
Seeing no objection, proceed.
First, before I introduce this page, Lincoln Huff is over here, Representative Huff. We want to give him a round of applause. He's in this chamber, I think more he is in the other chamber, visiting with folks. But I am here. It is my pleasure to introduce Maya Rideout as the page for the day. You might recognize Maya because she has been up here the last 4 years advocating for the March of Dimes. Maya was born at 1 pound, 15 ounces. And she is here as a testament to the strength not only of herself, but her mother, who is, I might add, is a Truman State graduate. It was a great name, Regina Rideout. That's it. Just has it flows off the tongue. But Maya is here. She's a special girl. She's a third grader now at Concord School in Lindbergh, and I would ask my colleagues to make her and her mother feel welcome and to be recognized as a page for the day.
Let us make the guests of the senator from the 15th feel welcome, and Maya will be recognized as a page for the day with compensation to be paid by the senator from the 15th. Senator from the 5th, for what purpose do you rise?
And for the senator from the 20th. Is
that the 20th? Senator from Christian, do you yield?
I do.
Proceed.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Senator. I was reading about this tobacco settlement bill. I wasn't really listening to what you were saying, which is so unfortunate. But if you can explain to me what it is you're trying to do here, do you have a fiscal note attached to it? Why do you feel a need to change it from... I see you bracketed 60 to 30. What's the purpose of that?
Well, there's three different ways you would fund a funeral contract. One is a trust that you and the funeral home would own together at the bank. One is an insurance policy. And, the other two are both insurance policies. And what we're trying to say is right now we've got one that's funded in 10 days, one that's funded in 60 days, one that's funded in 30 days. It gets kind of confusing.
So
we're basically
a universal date.
We're just saying
amount of time.
Yeah, we're just saying everything 30 days. That might, that's longer than 10 on the one. It's shorter than 60 on the other. But like I said, the one that's 10, the reason I would go to 30 there is because there's been a lot of banking laws that have changed in the last couple of years. Okay. It takes quite a while to pull together when you're trying to do a trust fund, trying to pull all that together at the bank. 10 days may not be enough to get all the information together, so we're just making everything 30 so it's real clear. And the 60-day one, I think, was too long.
Okay. The 60 you felt was too long. Now, who testified in support of this bill, and who testified against the bill in committee?
I don't remember I don't have an exact list of witnesses. I think the Missouri Funeral Trust testified for it. I believe the board had someone from the division that testified for it. And I don't remember anybody testifying against it.
Okay. And on page 10 of the bill, I see where you are bracketing out face value versus market value. What's the purpose of that?
Well, as I explained, there really isn't a face value of a trust. It's the market value.
Okay.
That's really, it was kind of a mistake to call it face value because there really isn't a face value. There's a market value.
How long has that language been in this particular statute?
How long has the language been
face,
like that?
Face,
probably,
face.
I think we did this, Senator Scott and I did it together in, I'm going to say 2006 or 7.
Okay. And overall, the funeral directors and all of those individuals who are involved in the prearrangements, they're all on board?
Right.
For the most part. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I just wanted to ask some questions about that.
Okay.
You have my support.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
Senator from Barrie, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. To inquire the Senator from Christian.
Senator from Christian, do you yield?
I do.
Proceed.
Senator, why are you filibustering your own bill?
Good point, but I wanted to explain everything.
You did, sir.
I did say that to you earlier today in a committee, and so I deserve that. You're right. That's probably the longest I've ever talked on a bill.
Thank you. Thank you.
Further discussion. Senator from Jefferson, for what purpose do you rise?
I have an amendment.
Send it forward. Has it been distributed?
No, it is not. It is brief, and it could be read, or I will not close until it's distributed.
Do you request that it be read?
Sure. Let's read it.
Okay. And do you move its adoption?
For its adoption.
Okay. The Senator from Jefferson moves the adoption of Senate Amendment Number 1 to Senate Bill 951. Madam Secretary, please read the amendment.
Senate Amendment Number 1, offered by Senator Whelan. Amend Senate Bill Number 951, page 7, section 436.455, line 18, by striking the word, quote, 30, end quote, and inserting in lieu thereof the following, quote, 5, end quote.
Senator, do you care to explain your amendment?
What I'm wanting to do is shorten the amount of time that the provider or the seller actually holds on to the consumer's money. And I guess I'd like to maybe go through this a little bit with the sponsor. So I guess, could I inquire of the Senator from Christian?
Senator from Christian, do you yield?
Yes.
Proceed.
Senator, I know in committee I had some confusion about this bill, and I'm still not quite,
sure.
I think, where I need to be. And part of that is what I do for a living by selling insurance. It's very vital how we handle our consumers' money. And I look at the bill and how this industry handles the money, and I guess it really concerns me. So the first thing I guess I'd like to address with you is the pre-need contract. Who is the seller and who is the provider on that?
It could be either or. A funeral home director can be a seller and a provider, but they would have to have both licenses. Or it could be someone else who simply had a seller's license. Therefore, the provider would have to be someone else.
Okay, so let's say the seller has to be licensed by the state?
They are licensed through the Funeral Home Embalmer Board, yes.
Do you know if they're bonded?
That I do not know for sure. I do not know.
Okay. Do you know if the seller can sell an insurance policy or if they can just sell a pre-need contract?
Pre-need contract is only, that license is only good for the pre-need contracts.
Okay. But so anyone that works at the funeral home could get a license?
Could, I suppose, yes.
Is there a test or any requirements to get a license?
I think there is a test. I know there's a license. I assume you have to do something to get the license, but I would say there is some kind of test, yeah.
Okay. Because in the insurance business, we have to take a test so that we understand the products that we're selling and we have to be licensed. But in our industry, the amount of time when we handle someone's money, we have a fiduciary responsibility to get that money into what we call as a premium account. Now, when a funeral home or a seller or a provider sells one of these pre-need contracts, does that money have to go into a premium fund, or is it just put into their normal everyday checking account?
Well, I'm not sure what in the original 30 days. In the 30 days, I'm not sure where it goes. In within 30 days, or no longer than 30 days, it does have to go either into the trust fund or it has to go into the policy, one of the two. It wouldn't be in their hands.
Okay, so it would not go into their general banking account?
It could within the 30 days,
it could.
But not after the 30 days.
Well, do you know why in insurance business we don't do that?
No.
Okay, well, I'll tell you, because if I'm a steward of your money, if you came in and bought, let's say, a $1,000 life insurance policy from me, and I put your $1,000 into my bank, and let's say somebody broke out the front windows of my shop, I may be tempted to use your money to actually repair the damage at my business. So the insurance laws require that if that money is not mine, okay, mm-hmm. It actually belongs to you, and I'm just an agent holding that money for you. So therefore, I have to have a separate bank account, and it's called commingling of funds. Stockbrokers deal with this as well. You can't commingle a client's funds. So that's something, I guess, that really scares me about what's going on with this industry, because I know in the past there's been a lot of abuses of people losing millions of dollars by buying pre-need funeral packages and then never receiving the services. But as far as you know, there is no such thing as a...
I'm not real up on that part of it. Where we got in and where the problems were, well, I explained earlier, was when particularly insurance policies were bought. And in those days, before we did this, and I think it was maybe 2006, before we did this, they could take the policy and do anything they wanted with it. And the policy was actually theirs. And yeah. That was where we got into all of the horrid problems of people borrowing against them, cashing them in, doing whatever they wanted with them, because basically it was their policy. And that we did stop. Now, I'm not 100% sure where the money goes, I'll be honest with you, in the first 30 days now. I don't know, Senator. Yeah. I like I said, we've given them 30 days to get the contract completed. I don't know where the money is in that first 30 days. I don't know.
Okay. Well, I guess, so that's kind of the purpose of my amendment, is I'm thinking if we could reduce that 30 down to 5, there's a less chance that money is going to disappear on the consumer, and there's a better chance that consumer, at the end of the day, is going to get a product that is going to be worth the money that they spent for it. But another question I have for you, and it's not something that you're changing, but there's the very next line after that change says that a seller may request the trustee to distribute to the seller amount of up to the first 5% of the total of any pre-need contract as an origination fee.
Right.
Now, when you buy a house, sometimes there's a 1% origination fee, but a 5% origination fee to me seems kind of large. I mean, if you're buying, funeral today could cost you, I guess, what would you say, maybe $10,000, $15,000, $20,000. If you were going to buy a $20,000 funeral, that's a $1,000 fee just to purchase this product. And I guess that's just the way it's always been, but does that seem high to you?
Well, no. It actually was way, way higher than that before 2006. That was lowered by quite a bit at that time. Down to, before the 5%, Senator, that's been a long time ago, but I think it was somewhere like 60% instead of the 95% at that time. It could have been as much as 25 or 30% or even 40% before then. So the 5% was actually quite a reduction from what had been.
Okay, well, it seems kind of high to me. But then even if we go to the next sentence, and this, I guess, really makes me concerned, is that...
The reason for the 5%, as I recall, and again, I'm going back several years, is when you had sellers, there was a commission to pay. And the 5% was to cover the commission to the seller who sold the thing to begin with. If you didn't have the 5%, there was no way to pay the commission.
Okay. Well, and that seller, okay, who could be the provider, they may make a request at any time after the 5% has been deposited that the trustee shall give them their money, and they get their money in 15 days. I mean, I kind of see an inequity here in that The consumer's money can sit in the bank or in the bank account of the provider or the seller for 30 days before they actually transfer the funds, but then when the seller wants to get paid, they get reimbursed within 15 days.
I'm not sure that's the way a joint account would actually work. I think the money would not go in until both names were on the account. And like if you were the funeral director and I was the purchaser, I think both of our names would go on at the same time, I think. That's the way I understand it.
But then but it says the seller may make a request anytime after that 5% is put in there, and that they get the trustees shall, not may, shall distribute to the seller within 15 days of the receipt of that request. So right. The law is saying that the seller gets his commission within 15 days, but the consumer's money is sitting in the bank account of the funeral parlor for 30 days. I just don't see that as being very consumer friendly.
Well, I don't think there's been problems in that regard, but I'm not going to, I don't know the process of doing that well enough to, I just don't know that there's been any problems in that regard. That's the reason. The problems, again, have always been on the insurance policies.
Okay, well, let me just go to the next thing, because it just seems to me it's like an onion. The more I read about it, the more questions I have and the more doubts I have about whether this is a consumer-friendly type of law that we have operating currently in Missouri, or if it's something that maybe needs to be scrapped or overhauled majorly. The next actual sentence says, in addition to the origination fee, so now I've already paid 5%, now the trustee may distribute to the seller up to 10% of the face value of the contract anytime after the consumer payment has been deposited. So now if you're the funeral home, you're getting 15% of the money, and there again we got another 15-day window. So the consumer pays in the money, and within 15 days, 15% of it is sent back to the funeral parlor or to the seller.
Right.
I mean, am I following that right?
I think that's probably correct.
Okay. I guess I really have a concern about that. And then do you know if, as a part of the requirement of the license that they're required to have, are the people that are the sellers, are they fingerprinted, do you know?
Say that again.
Are they fingerprinted? Do they have to send in their fingerprints in order to get the license?
I don't think so.
Okay. Did you know that as an insurance agent, if I sell a variable annuity life insurance, in order to get that license, I had to be fingerprinted?
No, didn't know. Don't. I just don't know enough about that business to.
No, you sure do. And the reason for that is because, there again, we're looking at trying to look out for the consumers. Do you know on these the pre-need contracts that are backed by insurance policies? Do you know what types of insurance policies are they allowed to sell to back them up?
What type?
Yeah, what type?
Well, as far as the prepaid, the seller, the main funeral home contract, that's just a contract for a funeral. Now, the other, where they actually turn in a life policy to help pay for it, that's a totally different thing. But generally, it would be a whole life policy, I would think.
Okay, so
I don't think you would ever buy one with like a term policy or anything like that.
Would you be able to sell a variable life?
I doubt that it would, because I'm not sure how you would predict the price of it.
Well, is there anything to prevent that from happening in the legislation?
It's not described in statute of variable life, I don't think. I think a whole life policy is what's described.
This is just another thing that I did not see in here where it required any particular kind of life insurance policy that had to be sold. So, I mean, I have a lot of questions where, like I said, the first one is I don't see in this statute what is required to get a license. I mean, can the person have a felony on their record and get a license to sell a pre-need contract?
That I don't know. Like I said, I assume there's a test that they take, and I think about anybody that wants to take the test and can pass it can get a license. So I don't know that anyone's excluded.
Okay. Well, now the money is it the so If I go into a funeral home and somebody sells me a pre-need contract and I give them $10,000 cash,
yeah,
okay, they can put that in a drawer and just keep it at their funeral home business for up to 30 days before they take it to the bank.
Yep.
Is that right?
I believe that's correct.
Well, I'm kind of uncomfortable with that, too. I mean, you could have, what happens if that funeral home gets robbed? Am I out the money that I gave them? Because they didn't get it to the bank in time.
See, well, I would assume you would have your paperwork from that contract, and I would think they would have to stand good for it, but, I mean, you would have your policy.
Okay. Do you know how many people are licensed to sell pre-need contracts in the state of Missouri now?
I don't. That's one that I don't know.
Okay. Okay. Well, let me look at the next thing here. So we're wanting to change the one from a 60 to a 30, but the other one you're wanting to change from a 10 to a 30.
Right, just so there's uniformity.
Okay.
And well, and basically the one that's 10, I mean, we discussed that a little bit in committee, but when I ask about it to some of the people in the industry, again, I think I mentioned earlier, because of the changes in banking law lately, that so much more paperwork is involved, and so many more things that are asked for, it's a little difficult sometimes to get all that done in 10 days. So it kind of made some sense to me to lengthen it, and if we were going to lengthen it any, it just made sense to me to kind of make them all 30 days, and then you knew what you know, there was no guesswork. You knew 30 days is when you had to have it done.
So I guess so. You're saying the people in the industry are telling you that it takes them 30 days to go to the bank and get a joint account funded or a joint account was authorized by the session. So to go to the bank and set up a joint account, the industry is telling you it takes them 30 days to do that.
Well, it could. It could take several days. I don't know if it takes 30, but it could take more than 10, I would think.
To go to the bank and set up a joint bank account is going to take more than 10 days?
Well, when you're talking about your will that has to be there, who has to sign, all the paperwork that goes with it, I don't think it'd be, it's not just as easy as you and I walking in and opening up an account together. It's a little more than that, I think, to get something that's like for a trust, something that when I die goes to you.
Well, I'd kind of argue with you there. It doesn't say that this is a joint account trust. It doesn't say that it's a joint account that has anything to do with a will. It says it's a joint account. Okay, I mean, a joint account, me and you could go to the bank probably, well, it's after 5 o'clock now, but we could probably go to the bank at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and walk out of there with a joint account set up, as long as we both had our driver's license and our Social Security numbers with us, and maybe even our birth certificates today because of the Patriot Act, they're requiring more and more information. But I really don't see how that would take 30 days to just set up a bank account. To me, that seems unreasonable.
Well, I'm not 100%. I'd have to talk to some of the banking people, but I don't think it's just as easy as far as paying for a funeral is concerned as going in and just open up a normal joint account. I think there has to be some paperwork that says if, when I die, you as a funeral director, what you have to do with that money, you know, putting my funeral, doing what you're going to do, all of that kind of thing. I don't think you just open up a joint account. When I die, you get the money. There's got to be things that state what you're going to do with the money. So
well,
I think
but,
it takes
but wouldn't
a
that
time.
Be part of the pre-need contract? That necessarily wouldn't be part of this. That would be part of the pre-need contract that I would imagine that these funeral homes and these sellers, they have a boilerplate, cookie-cutter contract when people come in. They don't negotiate with them for 30 days to figure out whether or not you want to buy it. They pretty much say, give me the $1,000 or $20,000 a day and sign the paper, and they send you down the road.
Well, that's possible. Again, I'm not a banker. I couldn't tell you, but I've been told by people in the industry it's just not every day that you can go in and open it up in a day. Let's put it that way.
Okay. Well, now the other part that confused me, too, on this bill was when you have if you're going to buy a pre-need contract and you say, to pay for this pre-need contract, I'm going to give you $5,000, but the other $15,000 is going to come from a life insurance policy that I purchased.
Right.
Okay? So I purchased that from the seller, who's also the funeral home provider, or the provider of the seller at the funeral home.
Can be, yep.
And we said, so I give you $5,000. You keep that money for 30 days before you even take it to the bank. But then when I come in to make a payment Let's say I say I'm going to make a monthly payment on that life insurance policy of $100 every month.
Okay.
When I come in to give you that $100 payment, do you have 30 days to get that money to the insurance company?
As far as getting it to the insurance company, I think that's what it says, yes. I think that's
okay.
What it would state.
Here's another great fear I have. And there again, I'm going from my life perspective, what I see happening every day in my business world where I sell insurance, okay? If I have a life insurance policy and it has a due date of, let's say, the 15th of the month, you're supposed to make your payment.
Right.
And if you don't make it on the 15th of the month, they can either send you a letter saying that they're going to cancel that policy, or they can charge you a fee for not paying that on time.
Right.
So if I go to the funeral home and I give them my $100 and they sit on it for 30 days and then they go to pay the insurance company, and the insurance company sends me a bill for a $25 late fee, is there anything in the bill to prevent that?
I think that would have to be stated in the contract, what you do in there. I've not seen their contracts. I don't know.
Okay. Well, I mean, you kind of follow where my concerns are and where I'm kind of, you know, this 30-day to me is an unusually large amount of time. Do you know that when we sell, when we take payments for car insurance at our insurance agency, and the way it works is you'd come into my office and you'd say, I want to make a payment on my XYZ insurance company policy, and usually people come in on the very last day, the day it's due. We go on the computer and we upload that payment and we tell the insurance company that, yes, we have received your cash. Now, we have 2 days to get that money into our premium bank account, which is separate because remember I told you about the commingling. We don't want to commingle funds. I got 2 days to get that into the account because they're going to suck that money out of the account. Okay? They don't give me 30 days. They give
right.
me 2 days. Okay?
Right.
So if I can operate an insurance business and take care of people's autos and cars and boats and motorcycles business, and I can handle their money, and I can get it from my office to the bank in 2 days, I have a hard time believing that just because you're a funeral director, it takes you 30 days to do it.
Well, I don't think they take it maybe in most cases to their local bank. I think they send it to an insurance company. But, yeah, it probably could be done in less than 30 days as far as the normal.
Especially with the way of electronic, I mean, with the electronics now, you would think that if I was selling someone a life insurance policy, I would have it set up so they could electronically pay it,
right?
And I wouldn't have to hold that money for 30 days. And the risk is, anytime somebody's holding somebody's money, it's like in the insurance business, you have your hazards. You have a moral hazard. Now, that's a moral hazard, is having somebody holding somebody else's money for 30 days.
Right.
I mean, 90% of the people probably are honest and aren't going to have a big issue with it, but 10% of the people out there are crooks, and we're going to have consumers going through the same thing that they went through a couple years ago, because when we revised this, we didn't do a good job. We did a partial good job. The life insurance policy, if it lapses, that's another thing that I guess I have a concern of. A life insurance policy should be a contract between the insured, which in the case would be me, and the insurance company, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now we're saying that if that policy lapses, then the contract can cancel with the third party.
Correct.
Okay, and I guess I have some concerns about that too. What if this scenario happened? You have a funeral director who maybe is not so credible, and they sell somebody a $20,000 funeral pre-need package, and they collect $10,000-$15,000 of that money, and they're making payments to an insurance company for the other, I don't know, $5,000. Well, we get close to the time, and they allow, because they don't get the money to the insurance company in time, they allow that policy to lapse. Now that funeral home can come back and say, guess what, we're going to cancel your contract because your insurance policy lapsed, and the consumer didn't do nothing. The consumer didn't do a thing, but
well,
they're the ones that are going
to
suffer.
The language we put in there says that any cash that you've spent is returned to you.
Including the 5% origination fee? I wouldn't think the 5% initiation fee would be included in that.
I'm not sure.
It doesn't specify
in
here.
If you paid premiums on a policy, if you put cash in with it, whatever cash that you've paid other than that insurance policy would be returned to you.
Okay, but the provider or the seller of the original pre-need contract
Well, no. You're confusing the two.
Pardon me?
You're confusing the two. The pre-need contract is totally different than turning in a life policy as part. That's what that language is dealing with, is if you have a life policy that you're using as part or all of your payment, and then you either don't make the payments on that life policy, it's to another insurance company. It's not to the funeral home or any agent of theirs. It's if you have, the example I used is like the Gerber baby $5,000 policy. If you have one of those and you want to turn that in as part of your contract to buy you a funeral, and then for some reason you decide to make your nephew the beneficiary instead of the funeral home, or if for some reason you lapse in payments, or whatever happens, if that policy is no good anymore, it was part of the contract, you simply cancel the contract. But if you have paid any other monies other than that $5,000 policy, that is returned to you.
Well, I don't see that in here. I mean, I see the 5% origination fee, which it says could be paid. I mean, and I guess that's a cash upfront deal, or it's a cash value of a life insurance policy. So you go into the funeral home and you say, I want to get a $20,000 pre-need burial policy, and I got no money. And they say, don't worry, we can set you up on a 20-year life insurance policy. Give us $100 or, you know, $100 every quarter. Or let's say $100 a month, for the sake of argument. So you give them $100. Well, according to this, the first $1,000 of that $100 that goes to the life insurance company can be an origination fee. Because you can charge up to 5%
origination fee. If you've actually bought a policy from them and made payments on it, and then you stop making the payments, yeah, you're not going to get the first $1,000 back because you quit making the payments.
But you, so then what this is saying isn't true then, when it says you shall refund to the purchaser all
that's
payments?
That's if you use a policy as part of your payment, a policy you did not buy from them, a policy you, maybe he bought the policy from you as an insurance agent.
So is there a benefit to buy the insurance policy from the mortuary guy versus buying?
Yeah, it's two separate things. You can buy a policy from a mortuary, which is a pre-need policy, or you can have a policy that you have bought from an insurance agent anywhere, a whole life policy, and turn that in as part of your. The reason you do that is because many of these pre-made, probably I would guess the higher percentage of these pre-need policy or pre-need deals are done a lot of times for people who need, maybe they're going to, frankly, go to the nursing home. Medicaid's going to start picking up their bills. They've got to get under their finance. They want to get their funeral paid for and get under their cap on how much money they can have. So they take their last $5,000 Gerber policy that would count against them, and they turn that in for as payment on their funeral. That's what that's about. And if they, for whatever reason, after they do it, decide, you know what, I really don't care about that funeral, I'm gonna sign that policy over to my niece, then there is no contract because that policy was part of the contract. And if it's not there, then there is no contract. Now, if you turned that $5,000 policy in and it was a $6,000 funeral and you said, I'm going to give you $1,000 plus the policy, $1,000 has to be returned back to you.
Okay, but the first, so where's the origination fee come from in that situation?
Excuse me?
Where does the, who pays the origination fee and where does it come from in that situation?
Who would?
Who would, yeah.
Well, the contract would be between the funeral home and the person that was buying the policy.
Okay, but I'm using the life insurance policy that I bought from an insurance agent
right. As
a payment source.
Right.
So where does the seller or the provider, the funeral home,
right. Get
their 5% origination fee? Do they get that from the cash value of the policy that I bought from the insurance agent, or do they charge me a 5% origination fee up front?
They would get, when you die, obviously the policy would be cashed in and they would get their $5,000. But up to that time, which is the big change we made in 2006, before that, they would have you sign that policy over to them and it would be their policy. And we stopped that. We simply could not allow that to happen because there was too many bad things happening. Today, the way that would be is you would still be the beneficiary. You would still own the policy. You would give it to them, and if you die, they would then cash it in. It would be cashed in and pay for your funeral. But before you die, you still own that policy. So you could change it. You could stop paying on it. You could do anything you wanted. And if that were to happen is what that's addressing. If you just simply, if the policy lapsed for whatever reason, and then you died and there's no policy there, there's no money there, they don't have to furnish the funeral. However, if you have paid cash along with that policy, they do have to return your family or whoever back that cash.
Except
they don't have to do the funeral, but they can't keep the cash.
Okay, but except for the 5% origination fee. I still don't see where the 5%, how do they get the 5% origination fee?
Mr. President.
Senator from Christian.
Would you lay that bill on the calendar, please?
That bill will be laid on the informal calendar. Senator from Cole.